Welcome to the Passive Mobile Home Park Investing Podcast with your host, Andrew Keel. This is the podcast where you can get the education you need to invest 100% passively in the highly profitable niche of mobile home parks.
Welcome to the Passive Mobile Home Park Investing Podcast. This is your host, Andrew Keel. And today we have a special guest in Mr. John Lindley, President and CEO of the Michigan Manufactured Housing Association. Before we dive in, please don't forget to leave a review if you get value out of this episode. It means the absolute world to me and keeps me motivated to keep recording these. All right, let's dive in. John Lindley is the president and CEO of the Michigan Manufactured Housing, RV, and Campground Association. Since October of 2021, he has led the 80-year-old organization headquartered in Okemos, Michigan. John joined the association after nearly 9 years as a lobbyist with Public Affairs Associates, one of Lansing's most respected government relation consultant firms. John, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Would you mind starting out by telling us about your story and how you got into your current role as the head of the Michigan Manufactured Housing Association?
Sure. You know, I started my career in the legislature as a staff member from a member of the State House of Representatives, and have always been really a kind of a policy wonk associated on, you know, focused on policy, and cut my teeth with a large statewide trade association here in Michigan, the Michigan Association of CPAs, nearly 19,000 certified public accountant members in the state of Michigan. And I worked there for 11 plus years at the association, driving the bus, so to speak, on all things policy and legislative and political agenda with the organization. After doing that for better than a decade, I went on to work for a contract lobbying firm, one of the state's public affairs associates that you referred to, one of the state's leading contract lobby firms. And while at that firm, one of the firm's oldest clients and bookend clients is this organization, Michigan Manufactured Housing, RV, and Campground Association. And when I joined the firm, one of the first clients that I started working on their engagements was this association. And after almost a decade of doing that, and I was ready for a different direction for my career, and at the same time, the association was ready for new leadership after the retirement of a couple of longtime executive directors here. Names that many of your listeners will recognize, Tim DeWitt and Bill Sheffer. And, you know, having worked in that capacity as a consultant for them for a long time, the transition I like to think was good and more seamless than what it could have been. And sure. So that's my story. I'm ecstatic to be in this role. I come from, like I said, a background in association management and policy. And that's where I love to be.
I love that. What would you say is the hardest part of your job, you know, running the Manufactured Housing Association in Michigan?
Well, right now, the hardest part of my job is the industry is under fire a little bit and on defense when it comes to some legislative priorities and the vision that some policymakers have that, let's just say, doesn't mesh well with what I think the industry's vision for itself would be. And so that certainly is one of the challenges at the current moment. But I think that overall, if you were to take that away, you know, the biggest challenge with an organization like this one is the diversity of its membership and meeting the needs and meeting the value proposition of a diverse membership. Our members, the Michigan Manufactured Housing Association, represent the entire supply chain of the industry, from the builders, you know, Champion, Skyline, Cavco, Clayton, you name them, right? From those who are manufacturing, you know, transport, installer, servicers, retail, certainly the bread and butter are the community owners, but community owners aren't just community owners. Community owners come in lots of different shapes and sizes and diversity. Sure. And so, you know, the diversity of the membership, lending, finance, legal, you know, all of the above. And in the association world, not to oversimplify it, but your job can be boiled down to a couple of very simple things. You need to provide value to your members, and then you need to tell them what value you're providing to them. You know, kind of a, hey, look what we're doing for you. So they continue to be members. That first part is complicated and difficult, making sure that you're providing value to all of those members on a daily basis.
And how do you do that? What's the number one way, specifically for community owners? Because I know there's a lot of community owners that listen to this podcast. What's the number one way you guys add value for mobile home community owners?
Well, that takes us full circle to the first comment that I made, right? Without question, right now, and even in better times, the top way that the organization adds value is through legislative advocacy. And I truly believe that to the core. And I think that most community owners, when you speak to them, would agree with that. We do a lot of other wonderful things. We spend a large amount of resources and time and energy in promoting, you know, manufactured housing to consumers, to the press, to the right, and we're trying to raise that bar of the industry and the product that you all have, hooking members up with members, you know, through networking and those types of opportunities is very important. There's a lot to that value proposition, but I truly feel unquestionably that legislative advocacy, because, you know, in a nutshell, there isn't anybody else doing it, right? I mean, that's what we're there to do, is to have that collective voice for the industry. So they, you know, the members of the legislature know when I walk in their door and talk to them about a particular measure, that I'm speaking on behalf of 1,100 licensed communities in the state of Michigan. And frankly, the you know, 250,000 plus Michiganders who live in those communities.
Sure. Sure. Which is huge. And maybe you can go into the details of kind of, you know, what's going on specifically. There's been some Senate bills, 486 through 492, that have been, you know, proposed, talking about, you know, rent control and the likes of it, along with some other, you know, additional regulation. And I would say Michigan specifically, you know, I know Iowa's had a lot of hits recently as well, but I would say you're probably one of the states at the top. That's, you know, there's news articles, you know, quite consistently talking about the state of Michigan and how private equity is, you know, ruining all the mobile home parks. If you listen to the journalists, they don't talk about the millions of dollars being reinvested into these parks. But yeah, maybe you can talk specifically about what's going on in your state.
Well, you know, Michigan, not unlike other parts of the country, is facing a housing supply and affordability crisis, right? And so that has shined a bright light and a magnifying glass on so many different things. You know, I like to say that, you know, with 1,100 licensed communities in the state of Michigan, and Michigan is a very heavy community state, without a doubt, that the vast majority of those communities, and of course the Michigan Manufactured Housing Association members, provide a safe, affordable, warm, welcoming place for Michiganders to live, right? There are some that don't meet that standard, right? From a quality perspective and otherwise.
Sure.
And that light has been shining on those, you know, some of those poorer examples of, you know, I mean, let's call them what they are, old rundown trailer parks that exist. Yeah. In some different places, right? And so when you have that on a collision course with a more progressive minded democratic control, and this isn't political commentary, it's just the reality of the situation we are in, right? More progressively minded House of Representatives, Senate, certainly the governor's administration, that you have those factors collide, and what you result in is a legislative and regulatory environment that has us on our heels a little bit and digging in defense. You referenced a specific package of legislation that exists right now, Senate Bill 486 through 492. But as an organization, we're actually tracking just under 80 pieces of legislation in Michigan right now. And I'll tell you that we're opposed to about 60 of those pieces out of the 80 pieces of legislation. There's a bucket of bills that are specific to manufactured housing, like the ones that you referenced. But there's also, it's not just manufactured housing, right? The legislature has rental housing landlords and housing providers in general in their crosshairs right now, with a bunch of just frankly, ludicrous proposals that would really, what they don't understand from our perspective, and this gets to our job, right, is to educate them, is the impact that these proposals would have on the supply and the affordability of the housing that's in the state of Michigan. So we're fighting a lot of battles on a lot of fronts right now in the Capitol.
And I think, you know, you might have touched on it, but like, what's the best way for community owners like myself to, you know, I'm an association member, but what else can we do to help, right? With I think that education of, you know, some of these, you know, rent control bills that are being proposed and so forth, which, you know, from I've read quite a bit about it, and it seems like that's, you know, only going to restrict supply further. And, you know, that's what it's done in the past. And, you know, I guess what's your guys' approach, and how do you, you know, go to bat when you try to overcome those objections?
So there's two answers to that question. The first one is really simple, and I'm not going to dive too far deep into it because it's not my role. And that is to say, do a good job of managing your community, because that helps all of us, right?
Sure.
You know, you know, have be transparent with your residents, have rent increases that are reasonable, do it right, be a good operator and do the right thing. That helps. Don't, when industry members get together and they use the cliche of, yes, of course, there's bad apples, right? Don't be one of them. Don't be the bad apple. That's number one, and that's easy. Number two, though, is, and it all comes down to time, Andrew, and that's the reality of it. What I'm about to tell you takes time, and I realize that the community owners and operators are really very busy people, and so some people have the ability to give time more than others. And here's what I mean by that. Yes, being an association member, that's number one. We need everybody to be a member of the association. And that's not just a financial transaction, right? That means everybody's under the umbrella, you know, when we talk about our membership. But engaging in the association's efforts is of particular use when it comes to this thing. So when we send a note to all of our members that are community owners with sample language that says, hey, please reach out to your state senator and to your state representative. Here's their names. Here's their contact information. We do everything that we can to make it as easy as possible. We even provide the sample language, right? Please send them this message coming from you so that they know what your position is on this issue. You need people to answer that call.
I love that you do that. Like, I haven't gotten that from any other state association. And literally, I sent it out to my whole team, and we had like 50 people copy and paste it into an email and send it to our local representative. And think of the traction, you know, now that we're getting, because it's not just one person reaching out. So you make it easy. That helps.
Well, and that's our role, right? Is we're asking you to give a piece of your time. The least we can do is make it as easy for you as possible to do so, right? But that's, you know, that's part of that strategy when we're fighting this. Is I can, you know, and this isn't, I can pick up my cell phone right now and I can have the Speaker of the House on the other end of the phone. That's part of my job, is to have that level of access, right? But like everybody else, I can only vote for one member of the House of Representatives. And so they need to hear from the people that live, work, own businesses, and operate in their districts. And that's that grassroots level engagement that we need to take place. The other part of it, I'll tell you again, is it does come down to dollars and cents sometimes, is supporting the Political Action Committee, right? There's a financial aspect of this as well. We need to be able to support candidates that we want to see win elections or win re-election that have a tendency to provide us, number one, with the access that we need to explain our side of the story, and number two, have the tendency to align themselves with that side of the story.
That makes a lot of sense. I know on the Michigan Manufactured Association Board of Directors, there's several big fish from some of the largest manufactured housing community owners in the country, including Sun Communities, Yes Communities, Cambio Communities. You know, what are they specifically, you know, wanting to change in the state of Michigan in regards to their like ability to operate, or what specific agendas, you know, matter most to those large community owners?
Well, I think those large community owners and the agendas that exist for them at the moment is the agenda that exists for all. When you look at our board of directors, yes, Sun is on the board. You know, a representative from Sun is on the board. Representative from Yes, Cambio. But you've also got, Marge Burns from Germano Management, who's she owns two communities in Michigan. You've got a manufacturer, right? You've got a supplier, Bill Anderson from Atwell, who does engineering for so many people. So, you know, it's a diverse group. And I would say that you know, because the association and our strategic plan and the way our governance structures exist, that the priorities for those members of the board and for the larger operators in the state of Michigan are very much aligned with the priorities of the operators in the other segments of the supply chain. You heard me reference before Michigan's affordability and supply crisis when it comes to housing. And right now that has created an opportunity for us really to make sure that the industry is positioned well as a solution to those questions. You know, the state of Michigan is spending hundreds of millions of dollars every year on housing efforts, whether that comes in the form of tax credits or other, you know, programming throughout the state. And historically, none of that has been, available to or impacting manufactured housing communities, right? And so what we're doing is we're throwing some elbows in the legislature and with the administration to say, hey, you're ignoring what is arguably, when it comes to speed to market, energy efficiency, quality, and affordability, you can't match the product that we have right now. You just simply can't match, number one. Number two, you're also talking about a situation where these residents are beginning to build some equity in something. They're not just... Sure. You know, and certainly, you know, rentals are rentals, and that needs to be a part of the market. I'm not suggesting that it shouldn't, but, you know, in the land lease model where people are starting to build some equity in something and not just, you know, pouring money into that endless hole of rental, I mean, that's where opportunity comes from, starting to build that something. And it's being and has historically been fundamentally ignored by the policymakers that are making these decisions. And so, you know, we're shining a light on that and making some headway, all that.
Which is great. But how could you talk about affordable housing and not mention manufactured housing, right? Like it could be built for less than half the price of a site-built house. And it is more green as well. A lot of people forget that. As like, you know, they build Clayton Homes at the Congress and Expo. The trash from one home fits in one trash bin. I live in a neighborhood and they're building up houses around me. And they, you know, every they week they come in and take a 40 cubic yard dumpster every week, you know, and it takes them probably 3 or 4 months to build this house. So it's something not talked about enough. You know, another thing, just from my perspective, there was an article that came out. We're recording this. It's August 2024. But in June on MLive.com, there was an article that said, as private equity buys up mobile home parks, Michigan ranks second highest. And that caught me off guard. When I saw that, I was surprised. I thought it would be Texas or Florida, something like that, in the Sun Belt would be, you know, one of those big, you know, states where there's a lot of acquisitions. And I'm just curious, you know, because I wouldn't say that Michigan is the most landlord friendly of states, but why do you think, Michigan is ranking so high?
Well, so first of all, I think it needs to be said going back to that article, you'll find that I was quoted in that article as rejecting the notion, number one, that community quality and community affordability is anywhere tied to who owns and certainly the geographic location of the owner. And in fact, I'll even take it a step further that if you dig into the details and the sources for that article, you know, they don't know what quote unquote private equity even is, right? They talk about a specific owner operator that isn't private equity, right? But their line seems to be geographically where the owner of the community is located. So if their corporate headquarters is in another state, then that in their
they
mind
think that's
is,
private equity.
Yes, and that it's bad, right? And that's not, you know, you forgive me, Andrew, I'm going on a little bit of a tangent here, but that's As you can imagine, I've been hit with that a number of times, you know, from different perspectives. And I use the example of, you know, yes communities that recently had, you know, there was a horrible tornado in Southwest Michigan, you know, in May that really, you know, it hit a community hard. And you had several dozen homes that were destroyed and families that were displaced and all the above. And, before the sun rose the next morning, emergency services were in that community. They were removing trees. They were finding temporary housing for the residents. They had food. They had shelter. They had water. They had a plan immediately to make sure that those residents were taken care of. Okay. That type of apparatus requires a level of sophistication and resources.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Right. And taking nothing away from the mom and pop operations that exist throughout the country, but an operation of lesser sophistication, you know, would still be trying to get the lights back on potentially. Right. And so this notion that big bad means ugly, right. That, you know, I reject that on its surface.
They mentioned something else in the article that I feel a lot of people don't know, but they mentioned, a lot of these private equity firms are using government, you know, debt through Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac to buy these. And the government is, you know, somehow encouraging the abuse of lower income families, you know, something like taking advantage of that. But what they don't realize from myself, who's done several Freddie and Fannie loans, is that in those loan covenants, there's tenant protections that we're required to sign on, giving the residents, you know, longer lease terms and other protections and guarantees of quality that will be kept in the community, or that loan can be called due. So, you know, they don't know the specifics of how it all works, but I don't think it's a total bad thing when you have someone with big resources and, you know, a bigger organization with a professional management company that can manage these assets at a higher level.
Well, that doesn't sell papers, right, Andrew? I mean, that's the reality of it, right? That part of the story. The other part of the story that I like to tell, and there's examples of it all over the state of Michigan. You know, one example that I'll use in Clinton Township, Michigan, where, a company, a larger operator from not located in Michigan, bought a community with 950 sites. Huge community, right?
Yeah.
Well, you know, there were about 450 homes in that community when it was purchased. Mm-hmm. And since then, they've invested over $12 million in cap. Wow. And moved in 500 new homes, right? Over a five-year period of time, right? Three clubhouses, trees, sidewalks, roads, signage, lights, 500 new homes. It's beautiful, right?
Yeah.
And that's not the story. When you talk about the association, again, one of our jobs is to tell that story, right? And to say, look, sure. When you go through everything that I just said, did the rent tick up on those residents in that community a little? Yeah,
sure.
It did. Sure, it
had
did.
To.
Yeah. But you can't have the conversation about affordability and the conversation about quality in a vacuum, right? You can't have those two conversations in a vacuum.
That makes a lot of sense. So is now a good time to invest in mobile home parks in Michigan?
Oh, I certainly would say so. I mean, despite the potentially the doom and gloom of the legislative, at least the portrayal of doom and gloom of the legislature that I've given in the course of this podcast, I would absolutely say that the association's doing, I believe, very, very good work here in Michigan in, number one, defending against those proposals that would be detrimental to the business environment, number one. But number two, advancing the dialogue and the conversation about manufactured housing and those solutions that exist throughout the state of Michigan. We're working with I hate to use the sports metaphor, but while we're on defense, we're also on offense on a number of things, right? Now, I'm working with members of the legislature right now on some reform to zoning in the state of Michigan, right? That'll make it easier for, you know, manufactured housing communities to expand, new manufactured housing communities to be built, you know, throughout the state. They need housing. Our job, fundamentally beyond just that, is to make sure that people understand that these are not the trailers and the trailer parks that so many people look to back, pre-HUD, days. That's not what we're talking about. So we have to take the product to people and people to the product so that they can see what's going on. I do believe that it's a good time to invest in manufactured housing in the state of Michigan.
That's good. Yeah, more supply. I love what you said about, you know, getting the zoning initiative, you know, pushed further ahead, because I think that's where it's been so difficult to build new. And yeah, if that was easier, I think we would have more affordable housing units for sure. Yeah. Let's go into our lightning round, John. Just a couple of quick questions here, and you can just give quick answers and we'll go right into the next one. What do you think the perfect mobile home park looks like in your eyes and why?
I think the perfect mobile home park in my eyes has a diverse homes as far, you know, size and price and set of those homes, right? You know, a community that's got, you know, some single sections, some multi-sections, some broad sets, some narrow set, certainly a clubhouse and the ability to recreate for its residents, good roads, sidewalks, lights, safe, warm, welcoming environment for its residents.
That's great. Yeah. Like a subdivision, right?
Yeah.
How can a community owner, you know, an owner of a mobile home community, how could they, you know, what would be like very detrimental, something they could do that would, you know, run the property into the ground, you know, something maybe you've seen or just some of those bad eggs that we were talking about earlier?
I'd say one of the most immediate and detrimental things that a community owner operator can do is to not communicate and to lack transparency with your residents. That's key. You know, rent increases are going to happen. Rule changes are going to take place. Rule enforcement is going to happen. Like those types of things, they have to happen for the safety and the enjoyment of all residents of that community, right? By and large, residents just want to know what's going on. And right. And so communication and transparency is, I think, the absolute number one driving force that can make sure that the relationship between the residents and the owner operator is a positive.
Yeah, that's a good point. What's the biggest threat to manufactured housing communities in your eyes, John?
Well, I think right now the biggest threat to manufactured housing communities, I believe, is zoning. You know, these legislative fights will come and go. They'll come and go with different, you know, in the power shifts in whether it's in Congress or in the state legislatures and the governor's mansions throughout the country. Those will come and go. There's red states, there's blue states, all of that type of stuff. But at a local level, unfortunately, I believe NIMBYism, you know, not in my backyard, is alive and well. And it's not just alive and well in the neighborhoods. It's on the city councils. It's on the township boards. It's on the county commissions. And that's the biggest threat, is, I believe, is if we leave too much and continue to provide too much authority to those making decision at the local level and don't check it and keep it reined in, you know, they'd like to zone us right out in a lot of
right
places.
Yeah. And I've seen it time and time again, where just because you're the only mobile home park in town, they want to shut you down. They don't want you there and they think it's an eyesore. So yeah, I agree. That's a very, very big risk, you know, in certain markets.
Yeah.
John, this has been wonderful. You know, I really appreciate you coming on. If any of our listeners would like to get a hold of you or, you know, talk more about, you know, some of the initiatives you guys are doing with your wonderful work, you know, up in the state of Michigan, how could they get a hold of you?
I'm easy to find. You know, visit our website, www.michhome.org. You can certainly reach me via email. You can reach me on my cell phone, 517-449-0487. But if you just, you know, if you Google Michigan Manufactured Housing Association, go to the website, you can see the staff contact, that type of stuff. Reach out to the association. We need as many people and members under the tent as we can have.
Awesome. And thanks so much for that. We'll put all of that info in the show notes. Before we log off, John, what's one last bit of important advice you would give a mobile home park owner, operator, investor that's listening right now?
Goodness, I think we've touched on about everything. I will say this. No, for those who are listening, whether it's in Michigan or anywhere else in the country, engage in your state association. And that doesn't have to be politically, as I was describing. It could be in anything. Be aware of what your state level association is doing. They're looking to provide value to you as an owner operator, regardless of where you are. So understanding that and knowing what's going on in your state association, that can make your operation more profitable. It certainly can make your industry more fulfilling.
Totally. Yeah. Well, thank you so much, John. Really appreciate you coming on the show. That's it for today, folks. Reminder, please leave a review if you got value out of the show. And thank you all so much for tuning in.
Would you like to see Mobile Home Park value add projects in progress? If so, follow us on Instagram at @passivemhpinvesting for photos and awesome videos from our recent Mobile Home Park acquisitions. Once again, that's @passivemhpinvesting on Instagram. See you there.